We're going to talk about Bigfoot again. You know, this is weird. I'm going to go on just kind of a slight tangent with this beforehand, because the last time that I did that in a Bigfoot video, it was just a rousing success, and I didn't get a single comment from anybody who said that they didn't like me talking for 4 minutes before getting to the Bigfoot story. Since everybody loved it so much, I figured I'd do it again. D. Mulaney saying, you're the one talking about transgendered Freemason and the Civil War against Bigfoot. Yes, I am. Doesn't mean I have to be smoking anything. What are you smoking? Why don't you get it? Actually, we are going to, at the very end here, we are going to be talking about marijuana. But I've tried. Okay, I did a Bigfoot video a little while ago. It was the Human Bigfoot War of 1855. And it exploded. I got like over 100,000 views on it, which is really rare for my channel because I'm lucky if I break 1,000 on any of these videos. I have the subscribers. I have the audience. It's just YouTube keeps suppressing things. But every once in a while, one will slip through. So I tried doing a couple more Bigfoot videos and they just got nothing. I'm probably expecting the same for this one, but you never know. But yeah, apparently because it was a clip taken from the weekly show, I had a big lead in for the story, and like nobody liked that. I got a ton of comments saying to knock it off and just you know to shut up and go on with the story. So I'll do that here. How a 1924 Bigfoot battle on Mount St. Helens helped launch a legend. Throwback Thursday. So this comes from This comes from Douglas Perry on OregonLive.com. So he writes, what defines the Pacific Northwest in the popular imagination? Surely a mix of stereotypical images comes to the average American mind. Serial killers, indie rockers, strong coffee, and liberal politics. Then there's the Peace Day Resistance. Bigfoot, our famous hidden resident. It's one of the Northwest's most familiar in-jokes. Sasquatch can be found on hipster mugs and t-shirts, and hairy beasts roam the streets on Halloween. A popular music festival is named after the creature. And as a result, it's been largely forgotten that intrepid investigators in these parts took the mystery seriously for years, tracking giant footprints and collecting reports of freaky whistling noises heard in the forest. Now, no one knows for sure when the Northwest Bigfoot legend truly began, but the most successful launching pad for the public's obsession with it is known, a battle that supposedly took place on a narrow gorge on the east flank of Mount St. Helens. The gorge is now called Ape Canyon. Now, that's where, in the summer of 1924, a group of gold prospectors stumbled out of the woods, shaking and glassy-eyed, to tell of a seven-foot-tall ape-like animals attacking them with boulders. So it was Fred Beck, Gabe Lefevre, and John Peterson, and Marion Smith and Smith's son Roy described coming upon gorilla men near where they had built a small cabin for their gold hunting forays. They claimed they were 8 miles from Spirit Lake when they encountered four of the giant animals moving through the forest with erect human-like strides. Quote, they are covered with long black hair, end quote. That was from the Oregonian. Is that how you say it? Oregonian? The Oregonian reported. Oregonian. Relating the descriptions offered by the men, quote, their ears were about 4 inches long and stick straight up. They have four toes, short and stubby, end quote. The witnesses estimated each animal weighed about 400 pounds. Taken aback by the sight of the huge beast, Fred Beck fired his rifle at one of the creatures and struck three times. The wounded animal toppled off a cliff. Beck reportedly claimed years later that another member of the party fired the shots. But as it turns out, the violence proved a mistake. So that night, the men said, they were awakened when huge stones began clomping against the outside of their cabin. Then they heard and felt giant bodies slamming against the walls and the door. The ape men, apparently, were seeking revenge. The beast eventually tore a hole in the roof, allowing them to target Beck. Quote, many of the rocks fell through a hole in the roof, and two of the rocks struck Beck, one of them rendering him unconscious for nearly 2 hours, end quote. Again, that is from the Oregonian. Now, finally, the prospectors said the sun began to come up, which prompted the animals to break off their attack and slip away. When the men poked their heads out the door and when they decided the coast was clear, they ran out of the woods. So tales of giant ape men weren't exactly new to the area. Hunters, lumberjacks, and prospectors have seen massive footprints now and again over the years. Native Americans in the area had spoken of mountain devils, but very few people seriously worried about the possibility of huge unknown creatures being out there in the forest. But that changed when the gold hunters returned to civilization that summer day in 1924. The dramatic story of their battle with large human-like beasts was irresistible and thus hard for people to dismiss. So with news reports and word of mouth causing the local sensation, the U.S. Forest Service decided to investigate. Now, Rangers J.H. Huffman and William Welch hiked into the forest with Beck, who took them to a cliff where he said the wounded ape man fell. Quote, from the Oregonian, a ranger scrambled down the supposedly inaccessible canyon and found nothing, end quote. Now, some might say, well, that's because they bury their dead. Some might say it's because it never happened. Beck and the rangers continued on to the prospector's cabin, and Beck pointed out the large stones that had been used in the attack. Huffman and Welch were not impressed, concluding that the gold miners had probably placed the large stones there themselves. But an Oregonian reporter asked the rangers when they returned to Kelso, Washington, what about the 14-inch long footprints near the cabin? Huffman created an imprint on the ground using the knuckles and palm of his right hand. They were made that way, he said. Despite the rangers' debunking of the story, people still wanted to believe, and the tale continued to spread. From the Oregonian reporter, quote, friends and acquaintances of the five men who reported their experiences are of the belief that they actually saw something which cannot be explained, end quote. Now, Cowlitz tribe member Frank Wannasey told a reporter about peculiar creatures the tribe's elders have often spoken about. Quote, again, all these quotes are from the Oregonian. If it's not, I'll just tell you. I don't want to keep saying Oregonian over and over again. Quote, Mr. Wannasey described them as between 9 and 10 feet tall, correspondingly large in stature, and their bodies covered with long hair, end quote. Also, the report continued to say that they were never seen traveling only at night. Now, Wannasey insisted that the animals were harmless. Now, in the years that followed, the prospector's story would be repeated time and again, inspiring various sightings of and theories about the beasts. Since then, Oregonian reporter Anita Nygaard wrote in 1974, quote, tracks have been sighted on the Lewis River, attested to by rational and honest witnesses. Occasional campers and motorists have been startled by glimpses of huge and mysterious hairy creatures walking like men, disappearing into the woods, end quote. Again, that is from Douglas Perry at OregonLive.com. I am interested to know what you think about well, I guess this story, but just the whole Bigfoot mythos, just the whole thing. I've said it in other videos. I'm on the fence with it. And, you know, I get people from both sides. I get people that say, you know, I'm an idiot for even entertaining it as a possibility. But then I get people who say, and these ones actually bother me more, because that stance, okay, I get it. But these ones bother me more, the ones that say, Josh, if you still think that Bigfoot isn't real after you've read all the reports, and there's just no helping you, and you know, you're just so stupid and all this stuff, because I don't believe in Bigfoot. It's like, okay, the burden of proof isn't on it's on you to prove it to me. Like, prove it. Like, right now, all there's a lot of subjectivity in it. And I'm not even saying that I don't believe in it. I actually would not be surprised if some type of giant ape animal man thing was found. I wouldn't be surprised about it at all, because it would answer a lot of things. At the same time, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. I find it fascinating. It's an interesting story, but I'm not going to teach my kids that it's absolutely hardcore 100% truth, because we can't know that. We can't know that yet. You know, I mean, there's a lot of evidence, but there's also a lot of evidence the other way too. You know, it's one of those things. It's like aliens or UFOs or any of these things that it's interesting to talk about, but we shouldn't be so dogmatic about it to just assume that whatever we happen to know as truth must be the truth. And if anyone else doesn't accept it, then they're stupid and they're an idiot, or they're a shill, or they're trying to obfuscate the truth from other people. That's such a simplistic, ignorant way to think. I mean, it's unsophisticated. That I would never want my kids to learn, you know, that way of thinking. That's terrible. If you believe in Bigfoot, I want to know why. I mean, I think that's fine. If you believe in it, you should believe in it, but you should also have reasons why you believe in it. That's why I'm just flat out honest about it when I say that I'm on the fence. I don't know. I don't know. It could be, or it might not be. It's either this one thing explains a lot, or a lot of things explain all these things. You know, if Bigfoot isn't true, then there's a lot of different things that have to explain all this stuff, right? And fine, that could be it. There's situations like that in the world too. But I don't know. Somebody is saying Brenton's Darrow and demon abduction was sad and interesting. I interviewed Brenton Sauna. He's a good friend of mine. I like him a lot. I interviewed him for, I think, almost like 4 hours, if I remember right, on his Darrow encounter. I also interviewed Sarah Brown for about 4 hours on her Bigfoot encounters. From what she says, she's basically got them living in her backyard, and they've been obtrusive, and they bothered her a lot, basically. And I don't have any reason to not believe her. You know, I believe that she's telling me the truth. Now, whether that is actually what it is or not, I don't know. I don't live there. I haven't seen it myself. I have no clue. Even if I did see it myself, I would have to wonder. You know, I've seen strange things in the sky before, but I don't know what they are. I can't just say that it's an alien spacecraft. Maybe it's a satellite or a meteor, or maybe it's a plane, or maybe it's secret technology from another country or something. Who knows? But I think that if we just take this really hardcore approach of, no, you have to believe it, and if you don't exactly believe 100% in this thing, then you're all of these bad things. That's what liberals do. Why are we as Christians doing that to one another? That's like not even really liberals. That's what leftists do. That's their mentality. You know, if you support Trump, then you're a racist and a bigot and a homophobe. You're all these horrible things just because of this one thing, because you don't believe this one thing that they believe. It's like transgenderism that we talked about before. If you don't follow that narrative, then you're transphobic and you're trying to strip humanity from other people. That's how they say it. What are we as Christians having anything to do with that type of stupid mentality? You know, if somebody doesn't believe in whatever belief you believe in, so what? You know, great, because it's actually good, because that opens the door to a really interesting conversation if you know how to have one. If you know how to set your ego aside, and if you can be respectable to one another, you can have some really interesting conversations with people that you don't agree with. And it helps their argument and helps yours. Maybe one of you will change the mind of the other, maybe not, but you'll both come out stronger for it. That's iron sharpening iron from the Bible. Iron sharpening iron does not mean we all have to agree with one another. It's like in the high priestly prayer when Jesus was praying to God and the Father, and he, you know, what did he say? Did he say, Lord, give them all perfect theology so that the world will know that I came, that I exist, that I'm here? I'm paraphrasing. No, he said, let them love one another and be in perfect unity as I am to you. We're supposed to be so unified. We're supposed to be as unified as Jesus is with the Father. How is that even possible? But that's what Jesus prayed to the Father on his own. You know, this wasn't some type of lesson he was just trying to teach to somebody. He was giving a prayer to his Father. This is God in the flesh talking to God in the Spirit in heaven. And he prayed that we would all love each other and be so unified as the Son is unified with the Father. And through that, the world will know that Jesus came. If we want to evangelize and save souls, it's not going to be by fighting about UFOs and Bigfoot and ghosts and demons and raptures and flat earth and, you know, just all this stupid stuff that we fight about. It's not going to be through any of that. The world is going to look at that and laugh at us, because what a stupid thing to do, you know? Because in their view, when they fight, at least it's about something important. You know, that's how they see it. But that's the world. That's people who aren't believers. Of course, they're going to think ignorantly that way. They don't know the truth yet about Jesus and the gospel. That's what we're for. That's what we're supposed to be going out and doing. If we waste all our time fighting with each other because we don't believe in something, you know, save for Jesus and the crucifixion and all that stuff and his saving grace, that you kind of have to believe in to be a Christian, but you know, just all the other stupid stuff, If we're so focused on each other, we're not focused on trying to attain that perfect unity with one another that Jesus had with the Father. So I don't care. I'm interested in the stories. I like the stories, but I hate the vitriol around all this stuff. It's the same with the Nephilim stuff. I'm interested in that as a topic. I think Christians should be. It actually, you know, the topic of Nephilim opened up a lot of the Bible that wasn't open to me before. But I hate the vitriol around it. And it brings me to the point where just on my human side, I have to say, I don't care if I ever hear the word Nephilim again. I'm so sick of it as a topic because I can't stand people fighting about it. It's the same with flat earth. I mean, and maybe this is my human side. Fine. It is what it is. I do not care about flat earth. I do not care anything about that. That is not a topic of interest of mine at all, because of all the vitriol around it, because you can't convince anybody of anything. You can't have a respectable conversation with anyone about it. I'm speaking generally. There are a couple people out there that are actually really cool. Immediately comes to mind John Pounders from Now You See TV. I like him a lot. He's big into the flat earth stuff, and great. He should be. If that's what he believes in, and he's got good reason to believe in it, then he should be that. Fine. I don't have any problem with that. That's good. I'm not. I'm a globe guy because I have reasons for believing that, and good, fine. I should be that. Jesus didn't ask for us to have perfect theology. He didn't ask for God to give us perfect knowledge on how to interpret the Bible. He asked for us to love one another so that the world will know him through that love, through us. So that's the solution. It's not about fighting about flat earth. It's about love. Okay, I didn't mean to get on that big tangent, but I think that's important. So hopefully that helps. John Smith saying flat earth is annoying now. Okay, the topic in and of itself, no. It's just some of the topic of flat earth is not annoying. It's just some of the people that want to turn – they make that their hill to die on. That I find is annoying because it shuts other Christians out and it makes other people who we should be evangelizing makes them look like idiots. And I know people say, well, people have gotten saved through flat earth. No, they didn't. They got saved through the Holy Spirit. They did not get saved through flat earth. If the Holy Spirit wanted to, he could get somebody saved through a phone book. You know, it doesn't – that isn't even a part of the equation. Joanna saying, good rant. Thank you, Joanna. All right, we got quite a few more people in the chat. I want to say hi to all of you. Thank you for joining. Let's move on to the next topic. We got two more, and then I will take some questions from the crowd. So we got two more quick stories here. Jen says, LOL phone book. Well, it's true. It's just I don't think the idea of, well, it would be like me saying, well, you know, I got saved because I found out what the Nephilim were. Okay, well, the Nephilim in the Bible were terrible, awful, evil beings that aren't redeemable at all. So they're not like a good thing. You know, it's good that might have helped some people come to the saving knowledge and grace of Jesus Christ, but it could have been anything. You know, who cares? That's not a valid response because it could have been a phone book. Could have been anything. The Holy Spirit is that powerful.
You can help fight against censorship by making a one-time donation or setting up a monthly donation to Josh Peck Disclosure at joshpeckdisclosure.com/donate. Or, for as little as $1 a month, you can become a Peck patron by heading over to patreon.com/joshpeck. As a Peck patron, you will be entered into contests to have your content featured on the Josh Peck Disclosure homepage, contribute chapters to a collaborative book with Josh Peck, and win a special Josh Peck collection full of materials worth hundreds of dollars. Also, for as little as $3 a month, you will have access to free downloads of Josh Peck books, such as Quantum Creation, Cherubim Chariots, and more. Josh Peck Disclosure is viewer-funded. Head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com for more information. Right now, head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com, the central hub for everything Josh Peck Disclosure. Every day, you'll get brand new videos, podcasts, updates, and more. Make sure you subscribe at youtube.com/joshpeckdisclosure. Also, make sure you click the bell and select the option to always be notified when a new video is released. Follow Josh Peck Disclosure on Twitter at jpdisclosure and get involved with the show on our official Facebook page at facebook.com/joshpeckdisclosure. disclosure. If you're on Steemit and prefer DTube, follow Josh Peck at steemit.com/@Josh Peck and make sure to upvote all Josh Peck Disclosure DTube videos. Keep checking back at joshpeckdisclosure.com for news, information, updates, and more.